Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. I bet by now you know that it's campaign season with all those 30-second ads bombarding your senses and all those news stories about how much money is being spent in this campaign. Today we'll examine the ethics of all this. We'll look at the ethics of donating anonymously to these big super political action committees that can accept unlimited donations and then spend them on behalf of favored candidates. We'll also talk about what's fair and what should be considered out of bounds when it comes to political attacks. And we'll talk about the responsibility of individual voters to learn the facts and sort of sort things out before walking into the polling booth. And we'll do all this with our ethics professors. They are Wayne Vaught. He's the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and Director of the Center for Applied and Professional Ethics at UMKC. Wayne, always good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Clancy Martin's back. He's chair of the Department of Philosophy. He's authored, co-authored, and edited several books in philosophy, including Love, Lies, and Marriage. And Clancy, good to have you too.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Well, Todd Akin and Kevin Yoder are both in the news so much this week. You know, both are under intense scrutiny for actions that took them each about 10 seconds. That's how long it took Congressman Yoder. That's how long Congressman Yoder was in the water in the Sea of Galilee, and how much time it took Congressman Akin to talk about rape victims. My question is, how fair is it, you know, to judge these two based on actions that took them each so little time when you compare that to the scope and breadth of their careers, Wayne?
Well, I don't think the time limit the amount of time that it occurred obviously isn't quite as relevant because, I mean, you can do a lot of evil and horrific things in a very small period of time.
Of course.
What you have here is you do want to try to put this into context. I mean, when I first heard about the Yoder thing myself, my first reaction was, why is this in the news? I mean, why are we even worrying about it?
Yeah.
But then you have to think about, well, where was he? What was he doing? What was his role? What was he supposed to be there for? And he was there as a representative of the United States. He did engage in a sort of a careless act as a representative in that role. And you have to think, well, you know, maybe this at least should be embarrassing enough. But I think that I don't think that we should give it, you know, so much weight that it detracts from all the other positive things that he has been doing.
How about Congressman Akin?
Congressman Akin has a situation where he has expressed a particular position on some issues that are very significant to the country. He should have known, I think, been aware of how important that topic would have been prepared to adequately address it. But it provides you, you know, sometimes those quick glimpses can provide you with a snapshot, especially the candid comment, something he wasn't expected, can give you a glimpse into how a person thinks and reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand from some of the justifications that he's now been trying to back up his claims, it's with sort of pseudoscience, not real very well-supported documentation to try to say, well, this is what I've been told. And you have to begin to think, well, how does this person process when he's encountered any other type of problem? How is he going to reason? What are the resources that he's going to use? And so in a position that is that significant, you would at least give you reason to pause. Now, I think you would want to look at other types of issues that he has dealt with, too, to get a fair comparison of this issue and not just sort of the snapshot. We do like to look for people to make that stumble, take that trip. It doesn't, you know, necessarily mean that they're evil across the board. But this was, I think, a pretty significant, nationally prominent issue in which he made a fairly significant error.
You know, Clancy, I guess the one caveat here, though, is that in fairness to the congressman, he has apologized. He said he misspoke. He said he made a mistake. Why isn't that just sort of the end of the story here?
Yeah, to me, it's a fascinating question, in part because it exposes some of my own internal hypocrisy about how I evaluate political candidates. And just to quickly elaborate, when Clinton was in office and they were making such an enormous deal out of the Monica Lewinsky scandal, I thought, okay, this is being blown entirely out of proportion. He's a human being. He's, you know, he did something, but he needs to be forgiven for it, and we need to move on. Now, when Aiken makes this mistake, I feel like, okay, this is unconscionable. The guy absolutely should know. You know, everybody should eliminate him as a legitimate candidate.
There's a huge difference here. Aiken was speaking words. President Clinton was taking actions.
He was taking actions, mm-hmm. and then he was lying about them. And right. he was president, for crying out loud, mm-hmm. you know. But at the time, I was in support of Clinton, and at the moment, I'm kind of feeling anti-Aiken. Mm-hmm. And
reflecting your own political bias, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Reflecting mm-hmm. my own political bias. And reflecting a kind of hypocrisy in the way I evaluate errors that are made by political leaders. And so the force of your question about the way in which we seize upon little errors that a person makes, or even quite large errors that a person makes, and focus on those to the exclusion of other things they've said, other actions they've engaged in, other policies they've supported, I think is very important. And mm-hmm. and whether it's a negative thing or a positive thing, a problem in the way the democratic system is working right now in our country is that it, as we all know, it has become very focused on the soundbite, and then in entire...
And the 24-hour news cycle takes it up to mm-hmm. warp speed in no time flat, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So while I agree with Wayne that it would have been better for the candidate, for Aiken, to have not made the kind of fumbling defenses of his claim that he's made that have actually made things worse for him, I think, rather than better. And while I think that it's also true that we may have seen something about the way he thinks that might make us a bit dubious about him as a senator, and furthermore, while the people I most respect as leaders actually do tend to be morally exemplary and very circumspect when it comes to the things they say. Still, I think it behooves all of us to ask ourselves, well, could I have made a similar mistake? Maybe not on the mm-hmm. question of, say, mm-hmm. consensual and non-consensual sex, but on some other area, like whether or not you could use a rifle to defend your home or whatever it happens to be. There's a lot of trigger spots for a candidate to go wrong. And just as I don't think one bad case of accounting down in Houston should have closed Arthur Anderson, I also don't think that one saying one really stupid thing ought to shut down a political career.
And yet, Wayne, the entire weight of the Republican Party in Missouri and across the country, for that matter, is solidly and united against Congressman Aiken based on these 10 seconds.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And I think that they've realized just how damaging that was. And so they're moving on to someone that they feel would be in a better position to represent their party in the election. And I think it is. It's a difficult aspect of the media response to this, because as we've already alluded to, is what you are looking for are the news items that are going to sell, that are going to get people listening, and listening to their ability to tease out a very complex policy. It's just, you know, people just aren't as interested in that, but skinny dipping in the Sea of Galilee, that's something interesting and something that will capture a person's attention, and so they're going to keep that up.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the – it comes back to the whole issue of democracy, how democracy is how the democratic principles in the United States are allowed to proceed, and the way in which we get the news and the way in which voters get informed is unfortunately very much restrained by this capitalist-driven media system that's there to sell advertisements, that's there to get viewers, it's there to generate revenues, and so they're going to want to be focusing on the news stories that are going to allow them to achieve that end, and that becomes unfortunate.
We're talking with our ethics professors today about a series of questions involving the political process. We're talking about Aiken and Yoder, our two congressmen, so much in the news right now. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, up to date, at kcur.org or go to KCUR's Facebook page. I think Mike from Kansas City, Missouri is going to lead us right into our next topic. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning to your guests. I'm really happy that you're talking about this. It's vital, frankly, that we have an electorate that feels comfortable participating in politics, and when there's corruption and ethical problems on a regular basis, voters don't feel as though they can participate in the democratic process. So my question slash comment is that we have lots of protections in place in terms of keeping things ethical, you know, by having, you know, sealed bid process and money really on the sort of a local level in governments is supposed to be very transparent. And that's really designed specifically to keep the public having trust in the government that the taxes we paid are going to be used well. So the issue is this. We now have a free-for-all brawl in terms of money. So I like to participate in government. I do lots of things to participate and help people get elected who I think are good people. But the problem is if I give $250 to a candidate, someone else turns around and gives $2,500 or $250,000 or $1 million or $2 million. And what does – I no longer can participate in that. And so we have a systemic problem, and this is a huge systemic problem with our government. We're losing the ability for citizens to participate in government because of Citizens United. And frankly, it's a snowball effect. I don't think we've seen the beginning of what's going to happen in terms of ethics because we're now getting politicians dependent on money for their election. So I'll take my answer off the
You know, Mike, that's very well said. And one of the issues involving all this money that Mike raises is this idea of the money can be given anonymously to these big super political action committees. Folks, you can never trace the money. As a reporter working for a major metropolitan daily, I can't figure out where the money's coming from. What do you guys make of that, Wayne? Is there something unsavory or even unethical about the idea of giving money anonymously that's going to influence the direction and course of a political campaign somewhere?
Well, I think there certainly is there certainly are problems with the way in which the system is set up that it allows the type of donations to come in just generally, whether they're anonymous or not.
I mean big dollar donations.
Big dollar donations, because what we are seeing clearly is a growing disparity between the very rich and the middle class. And
like
and
our buddy Mike here.
We've reached a historical division, and clearly that money buys power. That power can be used to protect the interests of those who are in power. And when you have that money being cycled into a political process, that ultimately those people are going to get sort of favors back. And the difficulty is that it doesn't allow the type of transparency that you would want to see in government. Well, why are certain government funds coming back to this area? Why are they picking these? And then if you are able to figure out, you can see this person gave this amount of money. Now there are certain government services being set up, and you can track that and see that and say, well, that looks kind of like bribery. Maybe looks more than just like bribery, that I supported you, now I'm do something back. And so it prevents the public from being able to understand and see those relationships and really provide the type of checks and balances that you want to prevent underhanded deals and those types of practices from going on, which are harmful not only for they're just harmful for democracy, harmful for the average person.
You know, but Clancy Martin, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the First Amendment of our Constitution, which talks about freedom of the press, freedom of speech is what I'm referring to, that there's no indication in that document that there needs to be a revelation here of who's saying what. It's just that folks can say anything they want, including corporations if they want to contribute. So why is there really any issue here if it's legal, I guess is where I'm going.
Right. Couple things. One is a remark that I think you made at one point, Steve, on an earlier show.
Uh-oh.
You know, I'll believe that a corporation is a person once one is executed in the state of Texas.
I did not say that, Clancy, but I remember I know the sentiment. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a legitimate question about whether we should involve corporations in the whether corporations ought to enjoy the same kind of protection from the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as a living, breathing human being. That's one interesting question. Another one is the kind of the law of unintended consequences mm-hmm. when it comes to the regulation of financial contributions to, in one way or another, to political campaigns. And as a rule, I'm in favor of a kind of mixed economy approach to solving economic problems. So as a rule, I'm in favor of intelligent regulation. But when we look at regulation of political contributions and the history of them in the past 40 or 50 years, every time we've introduced more legislation in an attempt to regulate money coming into political campaigns, yeah. all we've done is we've put people like yourself, people who are trying to follow the money, further and further away from the source of the money, made it more and more difficult. In other words, we're driving the money deeper and deeper underground
yeah.
and making it more and more difficult to track the money. And it's naive for us to suppose that we are ever – you look at human history, you know, for as far back as we've had politics, money and politics have gone hand in hand, and we are never going to successfully divorce money from politics. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't try. What we should strive for is exactly what you were talking about and what Wayne was talking about, that is maximum transparency.
Right.
And maximum transparency is probably not going to be achieved by accumulating more and more regulation over the way in which this money is distributed. Because if people have something to hide, they'll just get more and more clever at hiding it.
Yeah. But if someone wants to speak anonymously, why can't they do that under the freedom of speech idea? And what's the heavier value here, the right to speak anonymously or the right of citizens to know who's giving money to fund, you know, certain campaigns?
I mean, the right to speak anonymously, you mean just sort of generally or in terms of political context?
To make a donation anonymously and no one can track where it's coming from, that's in a way that's
constitutionally protected or
that's
liberty
speaking
interest
anonymously,
that people should have the right to, if I want to give Clancy some money. I think the issue is because this is a public office. Now, we're not talking about private exchanges, and the Constitution, I think, largely was set up to protect the public from the government. It's to provide the parameters by which individuals were free from government interference, and free speech was one of those. Liberty interests are another one, is that the government is not supposed to try to stop a private individual from speaking, from giving money. If I want to contribute to you and Clancy, whatever, the government really wouldn't have much interest in that. But we're talking about a political structure that's designed to protect or to fund the people. Mm-hmm. And so now you're engaging in a process in which there's a potential harm to someone from the government because there are transactions that are going on and that person's being asked to vote for particular parties, particular individuals
right.
who are receiving money, but that person can't get a real good sense of, well, which one is in my best interest. So I think that while there's certainly – I have my free rights to speak and to contribute money to various causes without that being traced back to me. Once it becomes involved in a political process, now you have for democracy to work, you have to have the individuals who are participating in that democratic process to be able to identify who's involved, yeah. who's making decisions, and where those are going. So I don't see the freedom to speak and to speak anonymously, to publish a book anonymously, to do a lot of the things that we can do in the world without being singled out as relevant to just sort of the fundamental underpinnings of our government, and that's the election process.
Yeah, well, there's something we're not talking about that we need to talk about, which is that the worry here is a quid pro quo. I mean, in addition to controlling the way an election can go,
right.
That's one worry, that is a kind of fundamental undermining of the political process generally, just because we suppose that the minds of the average citizen are malleable, and if we expose them to enough ads, they'll kind of have their minds made up for them. That's one worry. The other big worry is that, look, if I give $1 million to Barack Obama, then I expect that, you know, when I come to Barack Obama with or some person who works for Barack Obama, someone in his administration, say, I need this kind of help, that there will be some sort of – and we all know in reality, of course, that this is the way the world works. You know,
yeah.
If all of a sudden I'm willing to give $5 million to the block school, I'm going to have the ear of the dean at the block school a lot better than, you know, somebody who only gives $500 to
right.
the block school. I mean, it's as simple as that. That's the way the world works. But what we want is not necessarily first of all, we want as much as possible to eliminate the possibility of quid pro quos in the political process. How can we do that? The way to do that is to maximize transparency,
yeah.
because then we can say, okay, well, Corporation A gave $10 million to Barack Obama, and now look at the favoritism that Corporation A is getting. And that is why I think that's the what – a big part of what Wayne was talking about with the worry about harm coming from anonymity, because if you have complete anonymity, then we have no way of tracking whether or not a quid pro quo could be taking place.
Well, gentlemen, you mentioned Yoder and Aiken. Lots of phone calls come in as a result. Let's go to some of them right now. Richard from Odessa, good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've just got a question.
Yes.
When Todd Aiken said he misspoke one word, and if that one word was legitimate, as far as legitimate
yes,
rape,
right.
What about the rest of his conversation when he basically said that a woman that has truly been raped can't get pregnant? And so he's only apologizing for saying legitimate rape, but then he goes on and talks about a woman that's only been truly raped can't get pregnant. And I don't know how many pregnancies arise from rape.
Right.
Probably about 10,000, I think I've heard that number, a year. So he's saying that all of those women did not get raped.
Well, in fairness, yeah, thanks, Richard. I think when he said the one word thing, he did not address the second part of the sentence. He has since addressed the second part of the sentence and apologized for misstating about the entire statement, I guess, just to be clear and you know, speak on behalf of Congressman Aiken, which I don't want to do. But that's what he's been saying. Claudia from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to talk also about Aiken, Clinton, and Yoder. The difference that I see between what Clinton and Yoder have done and Aiken has done is that it's policy or personal versus policy. What mm-hmm. Aiken said affects his policy, his judgment on issues that are important to all of us. And what Clinton and Yoder did, those were their personal lives. And, in fact, regard to Clinton, it was just too much information. I did not want to know all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And Wayne, what do you think of the distinction that Claudia is making here?
I think it's an excellent distinction, sort of the public-private distinction that she's invoking here, is that when we're curious about the lives of others, there's sort of this odd sense in which we really kind of want to know about the personal lives of people. And oftentimes what we find out are things that we really, one, don't need to know.
Mm-hmm.
That probably have absolutely no impact on the person's skills and the job that they're supposed to be doing versus the types of things that, as she points out rightfully, I mean, the issue that he was speaking on, it was a major public policy issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that has been for 30, 40 years, it has been a major topic of debate for a politician to get onto a stage at that level and not be able to clearly articulate his or her position on this issue is sort of unconscionable, really,
mm-hmm.
To be taken off guard and say, oh, I misspoke. I wasn't anticipating his question. So I agree with her. I think that we should hold people more accountable when they're speaking on issues that pertain to policy and it pertain to the law and to the question of the types of decisions that they're going to make when they get elected versus really things that are they're very private and really have probably no relevance.
All right. Quickly, though, when we think of our leaders, one thing that we do think of is that in order to be effective leaders, they embody certain kinds of virtues. Perhaps paramount among those virtues is the virtue of prudence. Again, when I look at the leaders I really admire, they tend to be highly prudential people. And you have to be in order to lead, you know, a huge body of people effectively. Now, I think all three of those cases illustrate a kind of – all three of the cases that we're talking about illustrate a kind of failing in prudence and a sort of one in the case of speaking, two others in the case of acting. And someone might say, well, a little imprudentiality when it comes to expressing one's even policy views is a more forgivable sin than imprudentiality when it comes to having sex in the White office or failing to consider the fact that an awful lot of people are going to think it's odd that you're swimming naked in the Sea of Galilee.
And let me just jump in. I'm not supporting what Clinton was doing or even what Yoder were doing in terms of the sense that this is, well, we shouldn't have paid attention to the Lewinsky scandal. I think that there were clear problems with what was going on there. And then, of course, his whole handling of the issue, I think, was relevant public interest in that and their decision making. But it is, I think Clancy's exactly right. It's sort of a matter of prudence, and it's also a matter of image. And that if you accept a role in the public eye, you're going to be held to a different level of accountability. And it should require some appreciation of that. Whether it's right or wrong, there will be people who will be upset about Yoder's diving into the, you know, doing this bit of skinny dipping, and that may cost him his ability to hold
office. Friends of mine who have risen in political power that I've observed, their code of behavior has changed accordingly as they have become more and more influential.
In what way?
You know, increasingly aware of the fact that they're an object of constant public scrutiny, and they have to behave accordingly.
Lots of interesting emails here. Charles writes this: Aiken apologized for using one stupid word, but the real error was the specious logic behind his argument. Jarrett emailed this: it is one thing to apologize for using the word legitimate rape. It's another to ignore the hard fact that his position is based on fiction. Rudolph sent an email with this suggestion: why not lower the cost of advertising to be ethical? I guess for on TV and newspapers, that kind of thing.
Well, I think there has been some debate about
it is a lower rate, I believe.
For those types of things, even more closely managing how the monies can be used, provide equity for any individual who would want to get in. I mean, basically, when the Aiken thing came out and the Republicans shut the party down, people were immediately saying, well, this person won't have enough money to mount a reasonable campaign.
Yeah.
And there you get, again, one of the real challenges, and I don't think it's something that goes away easy that we can easily resolve, but it's one's ability to get access to those types of fiscal resources that are going to propel you or not into the public arena. And that really eliminates a lot of people who might make meaningful contributions in politics who are excluded from participating because of the finances. And again, if it's a matter of how is that money coming in, where are they getting it to distribute it, how can we ensure that it's a fair and equitable process so that people could equally have access to the media.
And there are solutions other countries have adopted towards having a more educated electorate so that they are not merely controlled by advertising.
Right.
Such as what you're talking?
Well, such as a deliberative democracy when they will – what they'll do, for example, they do this in Canada and a variety of Scandinavian countries. They've done it in other countries in Europe. And when there's a big policy decision or there's a big campaign, they will take the government will pay for a group of people to come together. The whole thing will be televised. They'll get the candidates involved. They'll get a bunch of experts involved. There'll be a 2 or 3 day summit, effectively, which is televised and put on the radio. It's all paid for by the government. The candidates and the various experts will be involved.
So there are ways to get around what we do, better ways to do it, perhaps.
Exactly. And then people will be educated. And, you know, so there are those are simple things that we can be doing and probably ought to be doing. Then there are, of course, these separate questions about blunders.
You know, Kim writes us on Facebook, there's nothing inherently unethical about politics. Politicians are hired for a job, and the good ones find common ground and consensus among all involved. Power-hungry, egotistical people have become the most vocal, drowning out reason and catering to narrow interest groups. Interesting. Mike from Shawnee, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. My question is an ethical one as well. I've never understood, and it concerns donating to elections in which you are not qualified to vote. My understanding is foreign individuals and corporations cannot give to U.S. elections. I've never understood why should rich people and super PACs and so forth in this country be able to donate to out-of-state or out-of-region elections in which they're not qualified to vote because they're not residents.
Unless the argument, Mike, simply is that if you're doing it in the case of a U.S. Senate race, that U.S. senator in Ohio could very well impact your life here in Missouri or in Kansas in your case.
Yeah, that's a stretch for me,
yeah.
Steve.
I hear you, Mike. I hear you. Good point. We're visiting with Wayne Vaught and Clancy Martin, both from UMKC. They are our ethics professors about ethics and politics. Let's turn to the ethics of attacks and attack ads and that kind of thing. You know, whether they're made in TV ads or in the form of attacks made in press statements, where does the ethical line get drawn here? I mean, is there any question, Clancy, that an attack ad has to be 100% accurate in order to be ethical, or can it slide on that a little bit?
Well, if we were going to eliminate all deception in advertising, we'd have to eliminate all advertising.
wouldn't that be something? I'd be out of a job pretty quick, though.
Yeah, exactly. We all would be, probably. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to me that when it comes in particular to attacks on a person, there ought to be a higher standard of truthfulness than there is when it comes to a kind of misleading portrayals of a product that encourage you to buy it, because one thing is, you know,
a product's one thing, a person is something else.
You're talking about a person's character, their family, their personal views in public. It seems to me that we ought to have a quite high bar of accuracy when it comes to that. Now, what accuracy means is precisely what we've been talking about throughout the show, in a way, because if you take a single act like swimming naked in the Sea of Galilee, or a series of comments that were misconceived, and you blow those up so as to summarize a person, that's what a lot of attack ads are. You know, they take snippets of what person has said or what a person has done, and they put them all in a row, and then they put certain kind of inflammatory image behind it, like, you know, the United States burning or something like that, or a flag being torn up, and in order to create an impression. And there it does seem to me that that's a good place where increased regulation would make a positive difference in the political landscape.
So in your world, you would actually have a panel of some kind overseeing these ads and checking them for veracity.
Exactly.
Well, and Steve Prasky's rule of thumb for American politics when it comes to negative ads, just don't watch them. Wayne, how about you?
I'm gonna second you on that. I think that the biggest problem for me with attack ads is how effective they are, and that they're effective only because you have an audience that is receptive to them and so is motivated by them. And, you know, one of the biggest problems, I think, with the attack ads are not that they are genuinely dishonest. Oftentimes they're presenting things that are perhaps true, but they're in such an isolated context that you can't – Senator so-and-so voted against X.
Yes.
Well, maybe Senator so-and-so did vote against X because it was a bad bill, because it wasn't going to achieve the desired outcome that Senator X wanted to achieve. There was a better bill that he voted for or she voted for that would have accomplished these particular things. But do you – you know, and so they can present the truth – in a very small snapshot, and it gives a misrepresentation.
There's always a kernel of truth to 90% of these ads, at least experience. Yeah.
But the worst cases, fellas, are the ones, you know, like the Swift boat ads, for example, where where there's almost really no kernel of truth, but the damage has already been done, and then they try. Yeah. They say, oh, yeah, well, maybe we didn't get this quite right, but people don't pay attention until they get this quite right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a great writer by the name of Renata Adler says that the only reason they print the corrections column on the cover of the New York Times is so that the rest of what's printed in the New York Times will seem more factual to you.
That's interesting.
And, we caught these few tiny little errors, when in fact, you know. I don't know. I think just not watching attack ads isn't quite enough, because people are entertained by them. And the fact of the matter is they're entertaining. You know, they're highly entertaining, a lot of them.
They've got you hooked, Clancy. Look out. You're getting suckered here. JR from Midtown. JR, you're on Up to Date with our ethics professors. Good morning.
My first part of my question from the earlier part of the show was, I have a problem with I apologize as opposed to I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like weasel words. And then he goes out and buys, or Aiken goes out and buys ad time, saying, well, I misspoke. I did all these things where I was misinterpreted. Why didn't he just issue a press release and leave it at that? It sounds, you know, the putting the money behind getting his counter message out, it's a bad taste in my mouth, to say the least.
Right. JR, thank you for the good call. Bill from Peculiar, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you both. This is a broader ethical question, not practical ethics, but applied. But in this era of massive economic problems that we have, is there a broader ethical question about the quantity of capital that is being spent on, in specific states, targeting political ambitions versus helping people in the economy?
Well, I think we can all agree that the money could be better spent. No question about it. But we are dealing with political reality, and it's a little bit, I guess I would liken your question to the furor over Obama when he decided he was going to take this this PAC money, which initially he said he wasn't going to take. And I think it comes down to a practical decision at a certain point. If you really genuinely believe you have a vision for a better United States of America, aren't you sort of beholden to raise as much money as you can in order to have a realistic chance of competing, so that you can implement this better vision that you have for the country? I mean, otherwise, you're just, you know, you're spitting in the wind.
Yeah.
But where those monies are used for attack ads instead of in pushing or incorporating to your ideals, is that not a contrary position that you're taking versus your intent?
So you're saying that you're using the money for a particular purpose that should be diverted to some other type of more?
Well, no, like I know I can develop a source of energy that will be economical for homeowners to use.
Mm-hmm.
But I spend my money telling you that ethics professors on NPR really suck at their job.
Mm. Yeah, I think you shouldn't use your money for that particular purpose.
I would go with the energy source.
The energy source.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for the phone call. Teresa emailed this admonition. I am so disappointed to hear your guest and Mr. Kraske conclude that Bill Clinton's personal sex act, which harms me in no way whatsoever, other than I don't like what he did, to the impact on the lives of young women that Todd Akin's beliefs and policy goals would have on women. Kim posted on, Benjamin tweeted, all campaign advertising should be run through the candidates themselves. All outside groups should be banned. How's that? Just briefly, responsibility when it comes to individual voters and keeping up with the elections, you know, in order to make an intelligent call. Wayne, what would you advise? What are the ethics of how the responsibility on individual voters?
I think that every voter who participates in the electoral process has an obligation to be as educated as possible. And all of these issues that we've been talking about, particularly the attack ads, really sort of go away the higher and more education you have about what's really going on.
But it's so difficult, Clancy. There's so many races. I'm even asked to vote on the water district number one in Johnson County where I live. I can't keep up with the politics of water district number one. Is it too much? Are we asking too much?
Well, I think it comes down to this sort of question of the degree to which you're willing to back up and support your own commitments. And those things which matter most to you, you are obligated to investigate the people who are representing those claims and vote accordingly. As far as those things that you maybe don't care so terribly much about, I think there's less of a burden. But the worst voters, it seems to me, are the ones who don't engage at all at any level and perhaps don't even vote. And then the democracy really isn't going to work.
You know, it's interesting how often we overlook this whole question of the responsibility on the individual voter. That seems to get overlooked a whole lot in our discourse here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, Clancy, always good to have you guys.
Thanks for
coming. Thanks for having us.
You bet.
Great.
Yeah.